My guest at this time is Milwaukee County, Wisconsin Sheriff David Clark. He is also the author of Cop Under Fire, Moving Beyond Hashtags of Race, Crime, and Politics for a Better America. Sheriff Clark is well known for his blunt assessments on law enforcement and politics and his disdain for the Black Lives Matter movement. We want to get his thoughts on those issues and other news in the next few minutes, including the Trump administration's standoff with so-called sanctuary cities. And Sheriff Clark, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Hello to you listeners.
Thank you very much for being with us. And let's start on that last issue since it's been in the news this week. Earlier in the week, Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced cities and law enforcement agencies that fail to do their parts in helping the federal government enforce immigration laws could risk losing some or all of various federal grants. And some of the mayors and chiefs remain defiant despite that. What's your reaction to the Trump administration getting tougher on this and many local officials still refusing to comply?
First of all, finally, you know, finally we have a president in Donald Trump who appointed an outstanding attorney general in Jeff Sessions. They are unapologetic about immigration enforcement, and I am as well. Look, we're a sovereign nation. If you're a sovereign nation, you have to have borders. If you have borders, you have to protect those borders. There are domestic security issues involving the border. There are public health issues with the spread of infectious diseases involving the border. And you also have to control the amount of people and refugees coming into your country. I said control those the flow because it is a strain on limited local resources. So these mayors that are out there are abdicating their responsibility to keep their citizens safe. This is nothing more than aiding and abetting criminal activity. When you start to harbor criminal illegal aliens, because that's what the attorney general is talking about, that's what the president is talking about, and that's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about immigration in general or even illegal immigration. I'm not giving it a pass, but I'm focusing on, as are the two I just mentioned, criminal illegal aliens. I think it's a good place to start because these individuals have no business in the country. Many of them have been deported over and over and over again, only to return, which shows that the border is porous. So finally, we have somebody who's going to get his arms around this thing, and along with the Congress, because the Congress has the constitutional authority to set immigration standards, but they're going to have to take this up as well. And you know what? The Congress is afraid to deal with this issue because it's explosive.
What's been the impact of illegal immigration, and as you point out, particularly criminal illegal immigrants in your jurisdiction?
Well, you know, that's interesting. We had a case several weeks ago of an individual, criminal illegal alien, criminal history. He was not deported because of the catch and release policies that have gone on. And in a domestic violence situation, he pointed a firearm at his girlfriend, threatened his girlfriend, pointed a firearm at his two young kids and threatened them as well. So, you know, that's just an example. We're talking about murders. We've had criminal illegal aliens involved in drunk driving incidents in Milwaukee County that have killed other motorists. We've had robberies. We've had sexual assaults. We've had instances of child abuse. The problem is, but this is going to straighten out too because the president issued an order. We don't know the extent of the problem because data isn't being collected, okay, on crimes involving a criminal illegal alien. It's funny how in this country the left demands that we collect data on all traffic stops involving Black motorists. We actually collect that data. There's a box you have to check and then a form you have to fill out. But all of a sudden now when we want to collect data so that we have some accuracy as to what's going on with this problem, they don't want anything to do about it. But the president has ordered that data start to be collected on crimes committed by criminal illegal aliens, and then we'll have a better picture as to the extent of this problem. But at this point, you know, there's not hard data, but I know of these situations because in my county, I work with ICE, and ICE officials have access to all of my booking data. They look at it every day, and they decide who they're going to give a further look at. I don't tell them, hey, look at this guy and this guy. They decide, and then they'll call and tell us, hey, hold on to this guy or this guy. We want to do some further investigation to see if this person's in the country lawfully. So I know what's going on here, but in many of these localities, there's not hard data because they don't collect it.
We're speaking with Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark, also the author of Cop Under Fire. And Sheriff Clark, that's one example, of course, of an issue where politics are intervening with law enforcement. And the same thing happens with respect to Black Lives Matter, as you spend a lot of time in your book discussing. You make the case that those activists care more about leftist politics than the actual lives of black people. How do you think they'd be acting differently if they were actually putting the lives of those people first?
First of all, things would change in the American ghetto. And what I mean by that, things would improve. Look, and that's the beauty, I believe, of this book, why I thought it was necessary, because oftentimes people only get to hear me talking sound bites on TV, a little radio. You have a compressed period of time, and so you have to just get off some sound bites on an issue. But this book will show that there's substance to my sound bites, and it wraps meat around the bones of some of the sound bites I make. Black Lives Matter. If they truly believe that Black Lives Matter, they'd be protesting in front of every Planned Parenthood clinic in America, an organization that kills more black babies than any other demographic. But I thought Black Lives Mattered. If they truly believe that Black Lives Matter, they'd be protesting in every American ghetto, especially, and not against the police, but especially in cities like Chicago, where 4,000 people were shot last year, over 750 murdered. Most of them, the victims were black. Most of the perpetrators were black. But they don't want to talk about that issue. So I look right now, Black Lives Matter is out in North Dakota protesting at the Dakota Access Pipeline. What does that have to do about black lives? There's what black people care about. They want better schools for their kids. They want crime-free neighborhoods or safer communities at the very least. They want meaningful work. That's what they care about. You never hear Black Lives Matter. If you look at their agenda and you look at that manifesto they put out not too long ago, back in December, none of that stuff's mentioned. Stuff like climate change is mentioned, more money for research for climate change, and also statehood for the Palestinians. What in the heck in the American ghetto? What do the black people that live in the American ghetto care about statehood for the Palestinians, about climate change? They don't. So that's why I said this is a political construct that has nothing to do with the quality of life of black people.
Let's bring it local again. What is it like in Milwaukee County? Do black people there inherently distrust the police? And what are you doing to try and reverse that?
No, they don't inherently distrust the police. That's a myth nationwide. It's been polled. Rasmussen did a poll recently. The New York Times did a poll. And in that poll, over 60% of the black people polled said they support the police in their community and they know they're needed. So, you know, we hear these, and it's part of the propaganda. This, I'm not suggesting that relations cannot be better. Of course they can be better. They can always be better. But who else but the American police officer? Who else is in these crime-ridden neighborhoods trying to improve the quality of life for black people? Nobody but the American police officer. So here in Milwaukee, let's take a look at some of the pathology. We have one of the highest poverty rates in America. In America, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, I think we're the fourth or sixth poorest city in America. We have one of the worst, Milwaukee public schools is one of the worst K-12 public school systems in America. I think only Cleveland and Detroit are worse in terms of reading and math scores, achievement gap, graduation rates, truancy rates. We got a poor feeling. We have a poor K-12 public school system. Unemployment. Unemployment for black males in the city of Milwaukee, 60%. 60% of black males who are working can't find meaningful work. It's not that there's no jobs. I said meaningful work. So I'm not saying they should turn their nose up at an entry-level job that's paying minimum wage. That's how you get into the workforce. But that's a cultural thing, too, when they won't take these starter jobs because they think they're and it's beneath them. That's a cultural thing. So until we deal with the cultural aspects, school failure, failure to embrace education, having kids born out of wedlock, we have one of the highest black infant mortality rates in America. There is no way we can turn this city around until the political class in this city, mainly progressive Democrats, a lot of them black, until they deal with these cultural pathologies. But it's easier to deflect away from that and say, hey, look at the police. Let's pick on the police. Let's blame the police for all of our problems. Let's just hammer on the police all the time. Let's just yell racism and discrimination so we don't have to deal with the ugliness of the pathologies that I just mentioned. So that's what I'm up against here. I'm fighting it every day, but I have an entrenched progressive Democrat political class that's not likely to change.
We're talking with Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark. The book is Cop Under Fire. Just a few questions left in our time together today. Sheriff Clark, early on in the book, you tell the story about how you raised your fist in the air as police drove by when you were a kid in 1969, and your dad made it very, very clear that that was not the right thing to do, and he told the cops he would take care of it, or at least gave them the impression with the look he was giving you at that time. And now, as you point out in the book, that's very different. The cops are frequently blamed for various things. You say in the book that it eventually goes back to faith and family to get that mindset back compared to where we are now. How do you get the ball rolling on that?
Well, somehow in the black community, we're going to have to rebuild a family structure. And one of the ways of doing it is get rid of this progressive ideology that fosters some of the culture, the dysfunctional culture that goes on. My dad mattered in my life. Dads matter. My dad was my first role model. My dad was my first hero. He was my first authority figure. My dad demanded respect. And when I respected him, that extended to the teachers at school, the adults in the neighborhood, and anybody else in a position of authority. And that's why I started with that story. Had my dad not have been there for me, things might have gone in a totally different direction, even in that incident. You look at some of the things going on today, like Freddie Gray and like Mike Brown. No father to guide and develop. Yeah, my dad was real clear. That's an authority figure. You're going to respect that authority like you respect my authority. And you know what? I learned that lesson real quick. But I learned it from my dad.
You also say later in the book that the worst nightmare for the left is a black conservative. And obviously your profile has increased here in the last few years as you've spoken out on various issues. What kind of blowback have you gotten? And at the same time, what type of impact do you think you being a black conservative has had on some of these issues?
Well, first of all, the reason that they fear me, those on the left, is because my message resonates and it transcends race. It transcends gender. It's a message, really, of just, hey, common sense. You know, if you look at it, there's a few black racialists across the nation in Milwaukee, but mainly the blowback comes from white liberals, white liberal Democrats, white liberal progressives. And the reason it does is because they know that I'm emotionally connected to this community. I'm emotionally connected to black people. They get me. I get them. They know better. Our people know better. They know some of this nonsense, these cultural pathologies that I talked about. They know they're wrong, but they're afraid to speak out because of this vocal minority of black racialists like Al Sharpton, some of these blowhards you see on TV, some of these black academics who know better as well. That's a shame. They know better. They know what it takes. They've gone to school. They've worked hard. They've made it. And they know what it took, and they're in a position to be able to lead, and they won't lead. So that's where I get most of the pressure from, ironically, though, is a few black racialists, mainly white liberals, white liberal progressives.
I know I'm not the first person or probably the last to ask you this next question, but what plans do you have, if any, for running for political office? Your name has been linked to the 2018 Senate race in Wisconsin as well as some other offices.
Yeah, I'm flattered by the energy and enthusiasm for it, but I never got into this. Look, I'm a lifelong cop. It's in my blood, and I'm in a position of leadership right now. I have a platform or platforms available to me to get a message out. That's more important than focusing on myself. I tell myself all the time, David, this isn't about you. This is about what you can do for other people. So, you know, I take life one day at a time. I never say never, but at the same time, I never got into this to embark on a long political career. I've been a cop and, enjoyed every day of it. So we'll see what happens.
And finally, sir, we talked a little bit about your relief at Donald Trump taking a harder line on sanctuary cities and enforcing the law. It's early on in the administration, of course, but I know he recently had the Fraternal Order of Police at the White House. From what you've seen so far, How would you contrast the current administration to the last one?
It's like night and day. There was a lot of lip service paid to illegal immigration by the Obama administration. As a matter of fact, some of the things that President Trump is saying today and Attorney General Sessions, what he said the other day, made it very clear those were the same policies that at least were articulated by the Obama administration, but they didn't follow through. So they were paying lip service to it. Now you got a guy, and I say it affectionately, a guy in Donald Trump, the President of the United States, who's actually going to enforce the law. And that is a shock to some people, but we're a nation of laws. People want to say we're a nation of immigrants. No, we're not. We are a nation of laws. We are a nation of lawful immigration. And this thing is having a devastating effect on communities. It's a strain on limited public services. And you talk about schools that haven't budgeted for this influx and needing bilingual programs and all of this stuff. So, you know, the criminal aspect, though, is the one that bothers me. The criminal illegal aliens are the ones that I'm going to help with, and I have been helping with, going to help ICE. I've applied for the 287G program, which, after training, deputizes my law enforcement officers with immigration enforcement. And we're not going to be doing home raids, and we're not going to be doing workplace raids and school raids like the left likes to portray. The sky is falling and the boogeyman propaganda. I'm going to focus on going after criminal illegal aliens who have been arrested for some very serious crimes, deported previously, but got back in. And once they get that border seal, the next time we get them out, we'll be able to keep them out.
And what about his relationship, his attitude towards the police in contrast to the Obama administration?
Oh, it's like night and day as well. All throughout the campaign, he was unambiguous in his support for local law enforcement. He understands this is a tough job, a dynamic job. You know, he, like, unlike any other candidate, made it clear that the police were going to have his support. The police were going to have the tools and the support that they need to do this very difficult job. That's going to help with the psyche of the American police officer who have been beat up for the last 8 years. And in some cases, you know, they're not as assertive as they need to be. They're still doing their job, but we need them to be more assertive and aggressive, and they're afraid to, because if something goes tragically wrong, sometimes through no fault of their own, they don't want to be the next Darren Wilson. They don't want to be the next Baltimore Six, the police officers that were maliciously slandered and charged with felonies that they did not commit. Unfortunately, the justice system got it right. So, again, it's going to take some time, because after you get beat up for 8 years, you know, it's going to take some time to for your confidence to be restored, to build yourself back up, but it's going to happen.
Sheriff, you've been very generous with your time today, sir. Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Milwaukee County, Wisconsin Sheriff David Clark, also the author of Cop Under Fire, Moving Beyond Hashtags of Race, Crime, and Politics for a Better America. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.